Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and Kathleen Johnson. So, we had a great conversation going last weekend, and hopefully our guests can call back in. I see the one already has. Manny's with us, Delonski, the managing editor at the BQ Brew in New York, New York. And perhaps we'll have David Williams from Roundtree 7 later in the show. And to top it off, I wanted to say something to a few of my friends that I know listen in to the show up in the northeastern end of the country. Go Pats. I am a Pats fan.
Yeah.
This game.
Hey, you.
I thought it'd be interesting, very interesting, to note, this is you know, the blender talking here, my other position at this bench. 6 million people attended a outdoor mass said by Pope Francis in Manila today.
Wow, 6 million. They were talking five. Incredible.
That is incredible, and that's a lot of good energy. And I just wanted to point it out. No, we're not venturing into the spiritual territory here.
Thing to note is that he's come out in favor of opposing climate change. That's a big development.
Absolutely.
There's several things that the Pope has actually. He's stunning me. I'm jaw dropping all the time with.
I know.
I'm a neo-pagan Celtic lady here, but I was classically raised and educated under the Penguins and Padres, so, you know, I keep my eye on it. So.
You gotta love these radical popes.
Well,
I love him. I love him. And, of course, his first name is Francis, as mine.
Oh, cool.
See? That's what that stands for.
Great.
One other thing I'd like to mention here, too, and this is purely Gwen putting it out there. I hope you all in listening land will hold a thought. They have there's talk of the X-Files being revived.
Oh.
I am.
Gwen, I got to tell you this. On the farm, I didn't have cable, and this is back in the day in VCRs, but I could tape because it came on late at night, the X-Files. Well, my youngest daughter, who was like two or three at the time, she would watch it with me, and then she would come to me like, you know, later on and say, hey, Daddy, let's watch Mulder. It's like, okay, we'll put in Mulder.
So,
that brings back a lot of good memories to me, warm and fuzzy stuff.
Well, it'll be good to hear from Manny again today because he got cut off accidentally last week. How are you doing, Manny?
There you go. Let's go say.
We all got kind of cut short. We got Manny on the phone, and then there's the 407 area code. I'm not sure if that's David or not. Who is calling in on 407 area code?
Not me. I'm...
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, this is Ed.
Oh,
hi, Ed.
Hi, Ed. How are you today? Thanks for tuning
in. Okay. No problem.
So the guest today, Manny and David, is in the chat room, so I imagine he'll keep up with a scroll or whatever, typing it. But last week we left it off in the discussions about the Je Suis Charlie in Paris. And the events of this past week, guys, I mean, have been really kind of incredible. I mean, the unfolding in the social medias of people finding out that the pictures taken of the leadership was pretty much a co-opt attempt, and that it was a put-up job for most of its, you know, ostensibly it was a put-up job by the leadership. And I think we discussed some of that last week. But coming into it, too, this week, There's been the Israeli newspaper, state-run newspaper, photoshopped out the women in the picture for reasons of modesty.
I think they mispronounced imperialism there, but okay.
I was like, you got to be kidding me. One other thing I also want to mention, and then you guys, we can sail back into it here, that really it gets up my ass a mile is Bill Maher. He's gone from, you know, really some edgy political spear chucking to a complete buffoon, in my estimation. The guy did Media Matters, I think, put out a video on him doing a speak back on his show Real Time about how the Berkeley protesters had protested him, and he said, "Who are you going to protest now?" or something. But basically, he was a smartass about it, and he just seems to me one of the most out of touch narcissists spouting pre-written crap on TV. You know, he gets all his stuff written for him, and he actually claims that to hit points off his racism against Islam, he never even got it, that it was that racism of Islam in general that the students at Berkeley were protesting. He doesn't get that. And he doesn't, furthermore, he doesn't seem to think there's anything wrong. And then he allows himself the arrogance of a global leadership by touting these 44 leaders who marched with Parisians a week ago. It was totally dumbstruck of anything of the put up job it was, and then going on to, you know, mock the people who have protested him. And I just got to say, and we do have the rating on this show for me to be able to say that Mark has his head so far up his ass, daylight's impossible. That was a needful thing for the producer to say. Okay, so Manny, Jack, Wayne, what about what has transpired in, you know, the last week? Because a lot of stuff has happened since then.
You were cut off last week, Manny. Why don't you start?
Yeah, there you go.
In some ways, France continued what I was trying to say, but almost felt silly saying at the end, like, France mobilized 10,000 troops, and this was the thing that happened the day after we were on the phone.
That's right.
Now, the very interesting thing is, so I'm looking at pictures all over Associated Press, which is then linked on Fox News as protest against Charlie Hebdo, and it's actually a protest against the French colonial tax,
right?
Which most people don't call that. It's really just an 85% reserves from 14 former, you know, African colonies of France's that is held by the French Central Bank. Most people would imagine French Central Bank, the French people, know those are private citizens. So it's interesting how kind of an amalgamation has happened here of, like, sphere and empire. Now, you know, as Americans, this might sound like, you know, familiar, you know, but what's happening is almost like immediately they brought out the guns at home. And mind you, just 2 days before, 3 days before. You know, as a matter of fact, it might have even happened afterwards. But I know farmers were protesting like crazy the sanctions against Russia, for example, which has collapsed the price of commodities, which, among other things, finance wants out of Africa, is sort of this upcoming capitalist rationing of commodities, which will be the next big speculative thing for finance, or is now in some ways, you know?
Yeah. Modification of water being topped.
I noticed, you know, even like Belgium put some troops on the street in anticipation of some kind of attack this past week.
That's right.
Well, they did raid a couple of cells. Yeah, go ahead.
and even Eastern Europe, right, which is like, you know, my family's from back there, and we immigrated to this country when I was around 6 or 7 years, you know, about 6 years old. One of the things that's happening there is there's been a shift into the right of the government, and they're all slightly nudging up their military. They're all modernizing their military. What seems to be coming, I'm not, you know, trying to be the dark cloud here, but in terms of prospects for peace and war, prospects for learning, which is the last thing we were discussing, maybe, you know, like we learned from 9/11, we should remember our unity of compassion, but not a unity of mind. We should sort of have a real sprawling kind of crowd looking for solutions here. You know, it is a very strange kind of reality to the look on one channel and the protesters there for against the tax, against the colonial tax, are labeled protesters against French free speech.
Yeah.
There is, and then you're saying, well, look at all these, and then they said, look at all these wonderful world leaders. And we're like, well, okay, we all considered this last week. And then we all kind of pondered the point of, boy, that's kind of interesting because, you know, they sure as hell, we have a video of, you know, a journalist being shot by a helicopter, right? And the person who exposed it, right, has been tortured, sent to prison, all sorts of shit. Now, the thing is, well, nobody was protesting for that, folks. For those journalists killed who were out carrying cameras to document the horror that was going on in Iraq, you know?
Right.
No,
they shoo the photographers away.
And now it's funny because they shot them this time. The video that was released on WikiLeaks, and that's why I started prosecuting people and hiring all these like private InfoSec mercenaries, completely black budget stuff. I'm sorry?
I plugged right into what you were talking about with the helicopter shooting journalists. Got it right in my head. I saw the film running.
Remember how there was no Merkel, there was no Sarkozy? Oh, my God, those poor journalists. They were just trying to... What? So it's very odd to suddenly see somebody who's so deep in the pockets of finance, to not say other, you know, holes, to say, wow, no, free speech, guys. You know? That sounds so out of the blue. We should always wonder why. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, we are going to, in my opinion, see yet another extension. You know, in America, rarely is it discussed a massive Wall Street land grab that's happened in Africa and in America.
Yeah.
You know, Blackstone Group has been the major purchaser of most of the properties here, but also these same kind of companies have bought up a lot of the primal extraction, whatever it's called. I don't mean to be too corny about this, but like base stuff you can just yank and pull out of the ground and like, stealing economy from nature stuff. You know what I mean? Like coal mines, water. The price of everything that is a commodity will be going up because that is, you know, the safest thing for capital to do when there's no more stuff for us innovating to be speculated on.
Non-sustainable is huge profit now. David, are you plugged into us right now?
I am plugged in.
All right, Dave. Very good.
Welcome you to
how's everybody doing?
Good.
Very well, thank you.
I'm just sitting back and listening, all the good stuff.
Okay.
And I have to say that I've watched what's been going on in France, and there's been almost exactly France, Belgium, and England all seem to be following the militarization of the masses of the people in order to prevent terror. It's like an American response over there going on. And basically, I can't help but think that there was some setup for this, grabbing that street credential with these leaders and then doing that. Sorry, somebody's taken. I have to get my dog.
There's that damn terrorist dog again.
Even the dog wants to chip in the conversation here. I understand.
I don't know. I think it's an Al Qaeda plant, this one.
Hurry, call the soldiers.
Yeah. There's five there's five people speaking English and one they don't understand. We're in trouble.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's right. That's right.
Dear Feds, that was just a dog.
I'm sorry. The SWAT team's already been called. They're showing up now.
You know, I can't help but think that people in Europe are starting to wake up to the lies that they're being fed, as well as Americans, a greater group of people are waking up to the lies that aren't effective any longer. And
right,
there's
right.
no confidence in governments. Well, in Europe, very much it's like that. But it's basically there's no confidence in this government either.
Oh, exactly.
And they don't even know half the people who are condemning the government at this point don't know half of the truth.
Right.
Of what's
right,
going
right.
on. I mean,
can I just point to an odd similarity here? Just the popularity and numbers of Francois Hollande before this, Giuliani, Bush, and just the amount of chaos they were facing at home from people who were like, hey, I think we're all being ripped off of the very rich here.
Exactly.
You know?
So,
and you know, like, much like the slowdown in New York City showed, there's all sorts of things these folks are willing to consider. Like, them exploiting a tragedy is like just so normal. It should be, it's not even a black swan, it's a white swan.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just like Giuliani has jumped all over de Blasio recently, you know. Anything to have his name in the public, you know.
And so there's something going on kind of constantly with this. Whenever there's resistance globally, there's kind of like at home there's a consolidation of who are we at home, you know, and what do we really stand for? And it means all the supposedly enlightened shit, and then we act like savages at home and abroad to go steal their shit and go pretend we have a new economy. But it's actually primarily just going to steal their shit.
Yeah, right.
So what's going on now? Like, for example, there's an expansion in the stock market and blah, blah, blah. No, there isn't. The primary growing landlord in America is Wall Street. The primary growing landowner in Africa is Wall Street.
Right.
Therefore, the primary winner and loser in both, you know, it's not a matter of sort of control. It's a matter of tendency by a group of people that also tend to have a majority of the power.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's nothing new, by the way. That's what people were protesting against in the Occupy movement. And
exactly.
It was great that so many people saw the light and so many people rose up, and that so many people behind the scenes have been doing, you know, good related matters that the media doesn't hone in on anymore. But there's been a lot of progress, not as much as we could have achieved, but there's been a lot of progress since the days of Occupy Wall Street.
What I would say about the Occupy groups is this, that their leadership strategy of everybody leading with a horizontal leadership basis was something people had a tough time with, yet they all gathered and supported and began to work at it.
Very true.
Let's face it, there were a lot of younger minds that knew what was happening than older folks who were just pissed off and helping to support on that side in a lot of ways. But now that the event of Wall Street is over, and it's like Occupy Sandy became a hierarchical kind of a leadership over it so that things could get done. And I think it's interesting to point out that horizontal leadership and group leadership is difficult when you want to move forward on things.
Well, you know, on one hand, Gwen, it kept individuals from being marginalized. It kept people from being thrown into jail for permanently and stuff like that. That's the only good thing about it.
Not really. I have to disagree. Please,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, how many people got 10-year sentences?
Let me interject a couple things here. In the environmental battles that I have fought there in Dorchester County, you know, the establishment kept saying, you know, we'd have the neighborhoods and group of people from around the county coming into the county commissioner's office and basically telling them, no, you're not going to do this. And they said, well, what you need to do is form yourself a group, pick yourself some officers and leaders, and have a spokesperson. No, you have a spokesperson. Now they've got somebody that they can target and lay lawsuits on. And
right.
But, you know, and you know, you've narrowed down. Well they can pinpoint their attack. They can't attack a whole wide spectrum of citizens of a county showing up saying,
point.
You're not going to poison me.
That
right?
Was
no,
my
that's
point.
The, right, and that's what I have done and saw how it perfectly worked. I saw how picking a leader would fail, and so I'm very much in favor of the dispersion of any kind of the horizontal leadership aspect. Plus, too, here's the other thing I want to interject, is those of the Occupy movement, they were a good movement and everything, but you've got to be forever vigilant because the other side, the opposition, is never going to rest. In this last appropriations to keep the government running, they removed all the checks and balances that had been installed on the banking and Wall Street to keep from the abuses that crashed the economy in 2007, really.
Right.
And they removed everything that was put in for the checks and balances. They removed them all there this past December. And now it's Wild West, Katie Barr, you know, just flew open the door, and they're going to crash the economy again.
You bet.
Manny, you were
well in defense of the Occupy movement and how it sort of became disassembled. I don't think they realized the extent of the force that would be against them. I mean, they had the Department of Homeland Security,
right.
The FBI, they had local
right.
law enforcement, and the fusion centers all working against them. And it has been proven that there was a coordinated effort in all the major cities at the same time to
break them up.
And
you know how
the,
yeah,
you know,
please.
Really
nope.
hear about in the media is, you know, you think that's something that would happen in a different country, but it happened here.
Oh, yeah.
It had an organized
oh, yeah.
government attack against a protest group.
Exactly.
Right. Well, and they did it back when the Civil Rights Movement. It was all a communist plot. They infiltrated
right.
Martin Luther King with FBI and agents, and, you know, he's feeding J. Edgar Hoover all kinds of information. And anything that they tried to tear it down, like I said, yeah, you're right. He had every police force in the South against him. He had our own FBI and even the CIA trying to squelch the civil rights movement, which was nothing more. I want to be treated like a man, a person.
Right.
So, David, I have a question for you, for everyone. But, David, I'd ask you, do you think the horizontal leadership or structure of consensus leading can work for people on a global level? I mean, because these tactics were employed, these disciplines with horizontal leadership were applied to many groups.
Yeah, there are some pros and cons about horizontal leadership. I tend more towards cells or swarms, you know, small groups that have a like-minded purpose, but they don't necessarily communicate back and forth. That way it has compartmentalization and isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
good point.
As far as responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The horizontal leadership, it was great for the Occupy, but it, you know, some of the messages didn't come across very clearly.
Well,
they tried to be not political.
That's
a five-second sound. Well, yeah, but they have to have some meaning. They can't just be protesting because they're pissed. I thought what was really clever was the 99%, and I think that they didn't pursue that much. You know, there's always this big aversion to bringing up class in the United States. You know that, but it really
does
come down to economic power and class, and
right.
people are not grasping onto that. 99% to 1% is a catchy slogan, and it comes down to class with that, but they didn't pursue that and keep it in a class state.
Right.
You know, even Fox was saying, you know, they're bringing class into it and all this other stuff.
Well, the right
you know,
always
bringing class
that.
Into it is not a bad thing. You know, especially
right.
when you have a discrepancy of income like we have today,
exactly.
where 100
Bush
has.
Bush
well
talk about that is class warfare.
I agree with you. Absolutely.
And what have they been practicing ever since day one?
Mm-hmm.
Class
no,
warfare.
It's
trickle down has been
the,
class
the,
warfare.
The ability of people to get an education, or ability of people to own a home, or the ability of people to get a job. It's
sure.
you know, it's class. It comes down to that.
You bet it does.
When you got all the economic power concentrated in 100 people, they're controlling everything. They're controlling the politics. They're controlling the media.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, more so than ever today.
Yeah, it's
and
obvious what the problem is.
When they dismantled the unions, the working middle class lost their voice.
Right.
And this is where, you know, we can say Reagan and stuff, but really the class warfare started all the way back when, oh, there's unions, it's the unions' problems, it's the unions' fault, it's the unions.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
they knew they had to divest that collective voice of the working middle class saying, you will not treat me this way, corporation. You will not give me, force me out as early retirement. You know, I'm still involved.
Well, somehow unions got to be a dirty word, and it started a lot with Reagan and his breaking up the airstrikes.
But it had been started before that.
That's how it was housed at Wall Street. The exact target of Occupy housed at Wall Street and the bankers. And banks are getting rejected. I mean, Iceland did it. Now Hungary is doing the same thing. You know, Hungary is getting rid of its leadership and its banking community there for the corruption.
That's never going to happen here in the United States.
Yeah, they just have too much power.
I think we should concentrate our efforts on persuading people to get their money the hell out of JC Morgan and out of Citibank and Wells Fargo and put it into local small credit unions.
But they'll just be bought up.
Here's what's going on a little bit here. And I love that we have so many ideas. Part of what's the problem with the Constellation view in some ways is that we're not, you know, we're kind of like picking at a lot of great things, and this is actually how we do the movement. But at some point, Occupy within itself, not Occupy, but all movements must analyze the structures of power around them. Mm-hmm. And now, when we approach a campaign means like a field of battle, we are not all playing with the same things. So when Occupy hit that main field, and this kind of goes back, we have to talk about this in the context a little bit of also the Charlie Hebdo thing and the global imperialism situation here. When Occupy began to exist, these are very small groups. These are activists. You know, as a matter of fact, it's very disturbing to find your name on lists, which I found being passed over and like bartered to the, as like potential freaking, you know, problems for the government, you know, by right wingers.
Yeah.
And it's very disturbing to have that happen to you in two countries, which I've had it happen. But there is the power structure here. Who are the billionaires that sponsor Breitbart, that sponsors that right wing hacker machine? So when we enter, it's questions like this. So, no, it doesn't matter. What I'm saying is those are specifics. We need to analyze power structure. Goddamn machinery in dynamic mode. You don't look at a gear and say, well, the round thing with the spikes, that's what it does. No, it makes an engine. You look at how the whole engine operates. What we kind of miss in America, because we are not allowed to have analysis, and we don't think of analysis, and we all have to be alpha, bro, kick-ass, the most declarative dudes in conversation and community and life and domestic and imperial situations. We don't lay back and actually consider, you know, sort of the structure. We feel like we can dominate. There's sort of an almost narrative drunkenness. It's just sort of what's being happening. What I'm saying here, in some ways, is as Occupy entered the fray, it was not a specific thing. And folks should definitely look at how the internal communications changed from the early to late. But it did not enter it in a vacuum. And those within the Occupy did not enter that vacuum. So those within the democratic power structure that wanted to dominate and could afford to get lawyers and be back there the next day were there. The poor kids from the hood that were from my neighborhood that got arrested, boy, they had to spend a different kind of time in jail. Mm-hmm. They didn't get their medication in jail. You know, mm-hmm. So there's an actual structure that's happening that is more than this situation, more than this problem. And what happens is that as we're engaging in these micro things, we cannot consider ever a battle lost. We can't consider like, oh, no, we're fighting the whole big goddamn structure. And so how did capitalism win? Well, they'll never get rid of monarchy. That was ordained by God. Bullshit. How did capitalism win? Piece by piece by piece by piece by piece. So the co-ops you guys mentioned, awesome. The protests, awesome. For every goddamn movement, they infiltrate and break, awesome. We'll have six more. For six of those they break, we'll have 10 more. So fuck it, bring it on. There's more poor people, and more poor people by the day. So you know what? We have a lot in common. The class shit David was talking about and everybody here has mentioned, that's the global game, that's the domestic game. It's funny how they overtax black folks and poor folks in this country, and they talk about them as the least working, the least contributing. And then they overtax and overwork and underregulate what we do to people in other countries and then say the same shit about them and use those excuses to pummel them the way we pummel the folks at home.
Right.
So what we need is when we lose or when it seems like they fractured the movement, or they broke our co-op, three more. And we're going to operate
good
like
point.
David
just
said. You know what I mean?
Point.
Like David said, with these little cells, if that's all they have us left, they're going to find we're going to have billions of them.
Yeah, persistence. That's what we just talked about. Yeah. Persistence.
You're describing cells, and that's how they give you the adjective of domestic terrorist.
Yeah, well, they also use a domestic terrorist for like environmental protesters because they're standing in the way of quote unquote national interests.
Well, David wrote an article. David wrote an article that was similar to what you're saying. I mean, about, and he just said it too, about swarms. Yeah. You know, small groups of people that are in a greater collective hive together, kind of. David, what? You do a much better description of how that works.
Well, I mean, without getting into, you know, more specifics, what it basically is you have a group of people that are like-minded but sort of disorganized, uncollected, and then suddenly an issue is brought up and everybody swarms to that issue in such a rapid fashion that it can't be organized defense against it. And then it dissolves back into the disorganized collective again. And then another issue comes up, and they swarm, and it keeps the Department of Homeland Security and all these others that are intent on breaking it up because they have classified it as domestic terrorism, which they did, Occupy.
Right.
Yeah.
It keeps them on their toes because, you know, you have the element of surprise.
That's good. You know, so much they can't handle it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have all these groups, and you instantly converge on a single target. You make your statement. You meet the press there, and then you dissolve back into the background.
Yeah, that's what Manny's saying too. I think, yeah, definitely, and it makes a lot of sense.
And it's a Hegelian kind of response if you want to think of super left or something. You know, like this is going to have to happen because couches killed more people than domestic terrorism last year. If we're not including the ones that the FBI count. Now, they don't count the right-wing terror attacks as terrorism. They only count local fundamentalist accounts.
No, they
terrorism.
just call those people madmen or something. Isolated incidents, you know.
Yeah, the lone wolf.
They also call them
the
lone
wolf.
Furniture
killed four people. You can fact-check me on this. The Philly Declaration also has this fact out there. Furniture killed more people than what the DHS exists for. You know?
It was probably people trying to put that damn IKEA furniture together.
IKEA.
They killed themselves, I bet.
Yeah, crushed them.
Where's the screws?
I've actually managed to do that, you know, put some IKEA. Yeah.
If you can, duck it, fuck it. Everything.
Good idea.
And actually for our movements too. That's actually how we grow. Like, look, I'm sorry, but they're going to keep aiming for us. If they spent so much more of their budget crushing people who stand for exactly what they said, this Constitution and this Declaration, whatever, all these wonderful, like, ridiculous ideologies they pretend we bomb the world for, right? If we were just protesting to just have human rights, and you say, no, that's more of a problem for domestic stability. If that's what the problem, we are the primary target of the machine. Yeah. Like, we're going to have to be great self-theory activists. What's great here is, if we're not super democratic, if we're not super transparent and composed of the community, people will get suspicious of us.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
So now we have to be transparent.
Right.
Now we have to be more inclusive. Now we have to be more sustainable. Good. Now our ecology must be included in our class.
We're seeing an increasing number of people swarming to different things, but they're all anti what exists today. You look in the environmental field, there's all kinds of opposition to fracking and to the pipeline and all that other stuff. On the economic front, there's all kinds of opposition to big banks and to money overtaking politicians and government and all that stuff. I mean, little by little, people are really starting to mold themselves against
this
stuff.
One thing I think that must be completely stressed, and this is a number one rule, very important, it must always remain nonviolent. Because you go into the violence, you're fighting against the masters of violence with an unlimited
budget. Just handing
the
right a tool.
That's right. There's no way you can defeat violence with their violence, because they'll win every time. And, that's what Martin Luther King, which is...
And Gandhi.
Very well stated. Absolutely.
Yeah. Gandhi as well.
It's got to be nonviolent.
Yep.
As soon as you create
as soon as you make it violent and
you discredit yourself.
Right.
Well, it's not just a discrediting.
You have the complete force of the
huge apparatus that's been built up that is just going to stomp you in the ground. There's no way to fight against that. So you always have to keep it in the nonviolent field.
Very good point, David.
There are some truths out there right now that weren't there when we had 2007 occur, just before Obama went into office. This was not true, but it is now. A lot of not just the American public, but the worldwide public, people officially no longer believe in the lies that are coming out of politics anymore.
Right.
There's a credible lack of confidence in politics.
Right,
I mean, in this
right.
country, Congress, the last Pew survey said, and that's, reasonable people they're calling in their TV time, are saying that they have 9% approval rating for this Congress. Even the Congress they just elected, oh, my God.
Right.
And
there's
no confidence.
Yeah.
There's no confidence in the corporate lines in the media. The MSM is getting rejected. The bankers, that people do not trust bankers. And among the military themselves, do you know how much mutiny is going on the ground in certain actions? I mean,
all kinds of it.
Not just ours. And then there's the absolute militarization of the police department and the murder rate that's gone, is just completely in the spotlight right now.
Yeah, it's gone through the roof. It's insane.
And there's there's more secession movements going on globally, but in this country, there's several states that have that are seriously trying to drum up secession. And another thing that's happening on the bigger, wider frame is the GMO foods rejected everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's and another thing I would put into this group too is that, and this is glaringly should be there too, is that cannabis is being legalized.
Right.
And that represents, and I'm not talking about being able to, the medical applications for it and the medicinal applications of using something that isn't
just
going
the recreational
to,
use has been legalized in many areas.
Yeah, it's not about that. It's the fact that people are willing to change.
Right.
And that shows you that there's a generational shift that has taken place.
Oh yeah,
that people have not, that we're not really aware of it. That shift.
Let's look at the major. You're talking about the major populist issues, and every one of them passed tremendously, overwhelmingly by landslide margins in red states and all over in every state it was put out, put to a referendum. They passed marvelously. So people are not adhering to the same old bullshit anymore. They want change.
Glenn, let me collaborate and reemphasize point that you made about even the military is showing disdain and standing up. I actually had a two-star general back when the W. Bush Iraq War, the pretend war with weapons of mass destruction reasoning.
Yeah.
The two-star general from the Pentagon openly admitted, he says, it's all about the oil. Halliburton
sure.
wants those oil wells. They see the opportunity to grab those oil wells. So they fan the flames of weapons of mass destruction just so they can send the troops in hopes of getting the oil. And, of course, like I said, I told you what I heard with my own ears was the 101st Airborne was going to drop in before the actual battle force invasion into Iraq to secure the oil wells so Saddam Hussein wouldn't blow them up like he did when he retreated from Kuwait. Secure them, and then when the main battle force caught up to where the oil wells was in the 101st Airborne, they were to turn those oil wells over to Halliburton. That was
we know we used Saddam Hussein for our own purposes against Iran.
Oh, absolutely.
When Iran
were the bad guys. We gave them the chemical recipes for the chemical warfare. We gave them the biological strains through
Rumsfeld. And then we damn the guy and we go after him afterward. It's insane.
Right.
Imagine our disappointment.
Yeah.
It was all right when he was using them against the Iranians, and I think there was I just saw a number on that. How many millions of people? Was it 6 million people on both sides were killed in that skirmish between Iraq and Iran?
It
was some huge millions of numbers just in that little border war.
It made the war contractors very happy, and it made us, our right wing, happy because they thought they were getting a foothold against Iran, and it was just boondoggle.
Jack, we sold weapons to both sides. That's what the Iran-Contra thing was all about.
Yes,
he made though, and that thing, and this is an event issue. I don't know how to describe this, but there's the false flags that are out there, and it's very difficult to tell what is a false flag, because extremism is, not only are there truly extremists, fanatical extremists for Islam, but there's also extremism that's being manipulated by the governments.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And do people get it? That the governments are manipulating. I mean, you know, the French people are the people who are proud to bring people up to the dock and have their heads, you know, if you take their away. I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, not for stuff they did abroad. This is stuff they did domestically. Stuff they did abroad was okay. Let's not forget.
Well, you see what they're doing. Do you know that they just contracted to build new prisons in France to house the people they figure that they're going to be arresting on extremist charges and terrorism?
Well, why don't they do what they do with the Japanese, just make the open-air concentration camps, and that way they don't have to have a whole lot of investment in buildings.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a problem. It's a profit.
That was tongue-in-cheek, folks.
Here in the land of the so-called land of the free, we have more people in prison per capita than any nation on earth. And, you know, with the advent of privatized prisons, the imprisoned rate is going up and up and up. This is insane. Everything's for profit.
Well, I'm
going to
talk about how
intimate
the problem is. A lot of them actually work for a lot of things, like I don't want to mention any big manufacturers because they subcontracted, but some clothes that are basically undershirts, pants, khakis, jeans, and for about what they pay in a black market South Asian sweatshop, about 11 cents an hour, you know, 70 cents an hour.
Right.
And, I mean... I don't know, we were just discussing about breaking unions, but at a certain point, you know, there's a hypocrisy that happens if a union thinks, well, just my union, just my job, just my shop. Just, no, man. Like, eventually, they'll get...
The whole system.
If you don't stand up for that prisoner, they'll give him your job and make extra prisoners. If you don't stand up for the prisoners...
Well, that's what made China so attractive. They had all these political prisoners that they were using slave labor to manufacture products in China.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, to be honest, when they were genocidally murdering through Eastern Europe for to redevelop, quote-unquote, for finance, this is actually how they killed them. They would say, well, you actually don't belong in this territory, blah, 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 something real estate. Here, you're in a factory, and you're going to be in a camp. And they just wouldn't feed them enough, and this is how they starved out Eastern Europe to build up some of the biggest companies that were, you know, where some of the biggest investment firms got some of their biggest, you know, finance. And so as we're talking about, you know, why would they crush all these small environmental movements, big class movements, international environmental movements? It's because they recognize, they've recognized for centuries what our generations of activists keep recognizing year after year, no matter how many of us they oppress.
Yeah.
The global hustle is a global hustle.
It's a hustle.
And so our
right.
resistance must be global. So
exactly.
I have to, not just global in a geographic sense, but if
right.
If I care about my job, I have to stick up for civil rights. If I care
right.
about civil rights, I need to understand the economic and foreign policy issues related with it.
Exactly.
You know, they are intimately related struggles, and in this we allow each of us to have an identity and all of us to have a piece in how we build the future.
Very true. Very good point. Very good point. And at the heart of it all, of course, is corporate greed, and just it's got to be curtailed. It's just that's our biggest enemy overall. All the other things are offshoots: the political repression,
well,
the economic
corporate
repression,
organization as well. No,
what's that?
It's corporate organization. They swarm, like David was saying.
Oh yeah,
we should maybe like they've already adopted this model for centuries.
Yeah, we've
got to
beat them at their own
commercial
game.
Interest groups.
We've got to beat them at their own game.
Dave, I would love to actually hear like how David thinks, like, because I really like his theory on this, and generally love hearing his thoughts. But what sort of how we could take this globally, the swarm thing? Because I think it works. It
David,
works
are you there?
With the 5 for 15.
Yeah,
thing.
I'm here. I'm
yeah.
just listening. Yeah, I mean this is probably the best opportunity to implement something like that because we have the advantage of the internet, and you know we have. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's such a big crackdown on the internet by the NSA and other intelligence is because they realize the power of communication.
The free
thought.
Free
thought, yeah. Yeah. You know, people no longer can put up with the
same old
outrageous
bullshit.
Acts and stuff that are happening in Saudi Arabia or Africa or something like that.
Right.
See, the light is being brought to these conditions, and it forces... public opinion, which causes change.
And people can compare notes and learn from the experiences
exactly,
of
yeah.
others.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
one person
yeah.
sees the advantages that this one country has, and then they're thinking, well, why the hell am I working for 11 cents a day to make Nike tennis shoes or, you know,
right.
or iPhones? You know, it brings a disgruntlement and the ability to reject their current living conditions to, you know, it's a great equalizer information.
Yes. Very good
yeah,
point.
I was going to say, let me interject a thought here. That's one of the things that irks me was during the Vietnam era, I'm the last of the Vietnam vets, and they sent me to South America because we had to fight communists down in South America. But as soon as Vietnam fell, because we had to fight communism and we ended up having to pull our troops out, Nike and a lot of the Fortune 500 companies instantly moved in to Vietnam and started manufacturing because they had the child laborers building the shoes for pennies a piece, but we're selling them for $125 here in this country.
Right.
Yeah. We hate communism, right? We got to sacrifice our youth to fight communism. Unless, of course, we're making money in China, Vietnam, or any other place that uses that low economic slave labor. Then that's good.
Globalization is a Ponzi
scheme. Hypocrisy.
Let's face
Rock
it.
Hypocrisy.
Yo, well said.
Globalization is a Ponzi scheme. The rich benefit from it. They exploit the poor. They don't give a shit who gives them their way. They'll trample them. That's all they're trying to do. They want more money all the time.
Well, and then also the IMF works to leverage themselves in. You know, they'll go in there and they'll get tragedy, like
and
a war
Bank,
or something that occurs. take Ukraine, and then what they'll do is they'll go in there and loan them a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Then once they got the money, then they can force them to accept all the manufacturing and all
exactly.
the other stuff that
exactly.
comes with it. It's
right.
Yeah,
well,
no
free market. Same thing in South America. You know,
and
look
at Haiti.
It's the same formula
yeah.
with Africa, South America, and of course the what was the Eastern Bloc.
This
well,
is
what
exactly.
happened
exactly.
down
I
in Haiti, where
wonder why
there was
going to
be a strike with Levi.
Yeah,
Levi jeans down in Haiti, and the State
mm-hmm.
Department aided in suppressing that, and there was a big massacre. Most of the leaders of the protest against the wage, you know, the wage strikers, a lot of them got shot.
And it's a good lesson as to why so many people across the world hate America the way they do.
Well,
you
when
know.
The TPP global treaty
gets
coming up, this
that abomination.
Any corporation that is in business to exploit natural resources is going to have the upper hand legally in too many countries and accelerate the decline. You know the downfall of the planet, and it's
if I can make one last point here to continue it. This is a political economy, okay?
Oh, yeah.
The 14, 17, 21, I think it's 14 French colonies, the I think it's a total 20. Most of those countries are forced to keep most of their savings in European banks who constantly mess with them.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing happens over and over. These sorts of mechanisms where it seems like we are reacting to political danger, this is a political economy. Capitalists do rationing. As a matter of fact, that's why they hold shit off from market. That's why then they splurge stuff on the market. It's a matter of fact, that's how they do speculation.
Exactly.
You know, that's rationing just as bad or worse than Stalinism because there is no limit to it. You know, it's infinite, and it's a rationing off from major two. So and to bring it all back to where we're starting from, you know, both in series, how do we react to sort of locally and globally, I think by reacting to all of them and defeating all of the problems, we are actually dealing with all the problems it gave us and pushing forward. We're making the new ideas by resisting.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Well, I got a question to pose to the group. I mean, now that the price of oil has dropped really low, I think it's $47 a barrel. You know, fracking breaks even at $63 a barrel. So, you know, they're still fracking because they have to. They have the equipment. How long do you think it will be? And now it's starting to get into the banking game because the people that have money invested and borrowed money on equipment, a lot of them
they're
are going to default. How long do you think it'll be before there's going to be a skirmish in the Middle East that will bring the prices back up?
Let me jump in on
crash.
In Texas, there was a company down there. They're laying off 600 people because it's no longer profitable to be pumping the oil in Texas anymore. So basically, the company's cash flow dried up. They're laying off 600 people. Here in Ohio, up around the Lorain, which is just west of Cincinnati, company there was making the pipes for the gas fracking. Well, it's no longer profitable. They're laying 200 and some employees off over there. So we're seeing the economic collapse and downturn. Of course, the working middle class is the first one to take and suffer the bite of it. But that's one example right there I can show you.
Well, I mean, my question is, do you believe that there will be a skirmish created in the Middle East that will crank the prices
up? Oh, absolutely.
Back up?
We do that all the
time. Beyond the ones we started now?
Oh, that could be manipulation of the market to create more profit, to create a shortage, an artificial shortage, to jack prices up. And invariably affect profit and make it go upward. Yep, I'm sure.
No, well, I mean, it's the Saudis that are driving the market down because they're overproducing.
Well, they want to put the frackers out of business.
That's right.
Well, it's not just that. It's sort of like they've expanded all sorts of as the price collapsed. People just started being like, "Well, I'm getting out while I'm getting good," and it also became profitable to buy from bunkerers, like really really poor people who just crack a hole in the pipe. Because there's no more food or edible anything around because we built these pipes around everything. And then they sell it. So one of the funny, fucked up things that nobody talks about is who's getting really impoverished by this, like which third world countries, and then who's actually buying all that black market oil driving all these prices down?
China.
I mean, no. Somebody's in finance is doing it. I mean, it's showing up on the books. We ain't selling, we're buying it. You know what I mean?
ISIS
it's like, it's funny.
ISIS
just like they never bust
the
job, they bust the prostitutes. You know?
Right. Right. ISIS is pumping the crap out of their oil wells they have control over. And Russia's got to try to keep up because of the sanctions. That's their only cash flow. So
right. That's,
you know, Saudi Arabia's pumping oil, yes. But so are these other aspects that's really flooding the market. And, you know, let's look at this. Let's extend this thought out. If you drove the price of oil down to $47 or even $30 a barrel, what does that do for the cash flow of ISIS?
What does that do for the cash flow of Russia?
Yeah,
anybody
or
China or Venezuela.
Just take that thought and keep extending it. That's why I gave the examples of ISIS and Russia.
ISIL.
You're crippling the economy. The ruble is in the toilet right now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's
Venezuela's foreign reserves is just getting crushed.
And this affects the Koch brothers,
their
too.
Their savings is getting crushed right now.
Right.
Yeah.
China's a growth rate by a lot. I know we're down to 4 minutes. I just wanted to say that. Sorry.
Yeah,
okay.
Joe, I just want to let you all know we have about 4 minutes left. And Manny, David, Wayne, Jack.
Yes.
Conclusory thoughts.
All right, let's let the guests start off with their thoughts.
Yes, go for it.
I'll be quick. I think we're going to see the global finance game push for the global war game because the destabilization will create will increase the price of commodities they're currently holding and will be increasing in holdings. This is about to get even uglier.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Next. We haven't seen the end of it yet. That's my comment on it. It'll be interesting to see what happens, and hopefully it won't be
thank you so much, guys, for having me on. Thank you.
Good to see you again, Manny. Good to hear from you.
Always.
Come again.
Thanks, Manny.
David?
Let's see, my final thoughts. Well, if you think this oil wars are going to be bad, just wait until it gets to the water wars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Well stated. Well stated.
It's going to make the oil wars look like a kindergarten.
Oh, yeah. Very good point. Yeah.
Very bad.
Very good point, David.
What a positive note to lead on, huh?
Well, and here's one thing I'll interject real quick. You make oil and drive down the price of oil and everything, you've basically are wiping out your alternative energy competition. And in the market, when I was in a regional sales manager, we used to call it buying the business. Yes, I'm trading dollars. I may be even taking a loss, but I'm doing that for the long term of I'm wiping out my competition in the meantime.
Well, you have people buying SUVs again.
Yeah,
that's the stupidity of the general
American. I was going to say, come on, people.
Yeah.
God.
All my soldiers threw up.
Some people don't think at all. They just do, it's cheap now. Oh, no, I can buy that big thing. No, it's stupid.
Oh, I always wanted a Hummer.
You guys want credit cards?
Yeah. Look at this big shiny object. It's in the pretty.
Yeah. All I can say, people, is keep pushing forward. Keep your eyes open because we ain't seen nothing yet. That's all I got to say.
Exactly. Critical thinking.
You bet.
Use
critical
your rules
thinking.
Of logical argumentation to weed out the bullshit.
Absolutely. You bet. Well, it'll be interesting to pick this up again next week. A lot of things are going to happen between now and then. The State of the Union is going to be on Tuesday. We'll see what kind of bull crap and what kind of response is to that. But
Glenn,
what's your thoughts? I'm sorry.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. You're hosting all of us here. Please. Well, what do you make of all this?
I actually would leave with one thought. You know, the most important thing I think each of us can do, besides remaining committed to what we want to see changed and getting as far involved as we possibly can, is to remember every day kindness, just working with the kindness, walking with kindness. Be kind.
Yep, good point.
That makes a difference. It makes a big difference. You know, we need it.
Absolutely.
To stay embraced in the struggle here too. It really takes kindness there too. So that would be my last thought. I thank you guys.
Thank you, Gwen.
We thank you.
Thank you,
it's been a great show.
We'll look forward to next week.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Yep. Good night, everybody.
Joe Dell and F. Wayne Johnson, David Williams, guest of Roundtree 7, and Annie Jalomsky from the BQ Brew in New York. I'm fine. Thank you for listening. This has been a fun show and sponsored by Roundtree 7.